Blog Talk Radio.
And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in, touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man, ball caught, Jennings, Gary Jennings breaks the tackle, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone, touchdown, Gary Jennings! And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
Sorry, by Goddard. Let's try this again. We are now on live for the entire hour. I messed up and created an episode that was only 15 minutes long. That's on me. My bad. I'm learning how to use this as well. So, again, my name is Bart. I am here to take your calls and maybe ease you off the ledge a little bit after that last game. We'll get to the refereeing decisions, I promise. But you can call the show at 917-932-1765. Again, that's 917-932-1765. So, again, this is the Smoking Musket Podcast. We are talking about Dana Holgorsen's record against top 25 teams. He's 6-17. Now, granted, you know, these top 25 teams have been Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, TCU. So these are much tougher caliber opponents. And I think that's something to note, but it has not been a good run of form for Damon Holgorsen's teams against, you know, really good ranked teams. Dan Holgorsen is now in a 9-game losing streak to ranked teams. In fact, I want to say the last ranked team we beat was Baylor in 2014, when we beat Baylor. And these losses are, you know, they're some of them are heartbreaking. Obviously, the TCU, the loss against TCU when, you know, they were ranked number 10 and we were ranked highly. The game day was in town. We lost 31-30. That sucked. The Kansas State loss in 2014, 26-20. Oklahoma loss in 2015 to open up conference play, 44-24. Losing to Oklahoma State at home for homecoming in 2015 also sucked, 33-26, the final there. Then losing to Baylor in 2015 as I got a little bit of revenge on us, 62-38. And, you know, we've lost to TCU now three out of the last, what, four times we played them. You know, we beat them last year in 2016, but they weren't ranked. And, you know, we've lost them three times in a row that they've been ranked. So this is a concerning trend, honestly, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all. But what are you going to do? You've got to take this on and say, look, what is the problem here? Is it a talent level? Well, I don't think the most talented team won yesterday. If you look at the stats, clearly West Virginia outgained TCU in just about every facet. TCU did outrush us, but I mean, individually, Justin Crawford went for 111 yards on 19 carries. It's a really good day for Justin Crawford, and that's his fifth game in triple digits. So that's pretty awesome, if you ask me. That's a very good season for him. Five games, five 100-yard performances. Now, you know, McCoy and Petway didn't really get into the game much. They were not effective in their limited carries. I think they had 16 carries apiece. I get that it's hard to be effective there, but that's what they're there for. They're there to spell Justin Crawford for a play or two, and you still need them to be productive, and they just weren't. If you have any thoughts about this, either the Dana Holgorsen losing streak or this loss to TCU, call 917-932-1765, and you can talk to me share your opinions here on the Smoking Musket podcast. So that's one thing that just bothers me is the fact that, you know, we're 6-17 and have lost 9 straight to ranked opponents. It's not good. And that's 6-17 to top 25 opponents under Dana Holgorsen. And, you know, again, 9 of those have been in a row. Another thing that's a little concerning, and, you know, I don't know how to touch on this, but it does need to be talked about a little bit. But this is the second loss we've had this year, both 31-24, but both times we've had the ball in our hands in the final minute or so, you know, 2 minutes, I guess you could say, with a chance to win the game, with a chance to tie the game at least. And we failed to do so both times. Now, the Virginia Tech game was very different. We had a ball slip through Sills' hand, and, you know, that it was very close. But this game, despite that incredibly terrible pass interference call on David Sills, which, if you have not seen that going around Twitter, I don't know how David Sills gets an offensive pass interference called against him when the TCU defender has his hands literally grabbing Sills' jersey. So I'm not quite sure how that works, but, you know, it's fine. It's not fine, but it's fine that you think that. But look, we still had an opportunity to win the game. And at this point, down and distance don't matter. Right, when you're in the 2-minute hurry up, yeah, you want to get first downs, but what you're trying to do is get chunks of yards at a time and save the clock. So getting a first down is one way to save the clock. We just weren't able to do it. And it's the second game this year where we have had an opportunity to come back the game and we were unable to do it. Let's see if I can find this play chart, this drive chart for the last Yeah, here it is. Yeah, let's see if I can find this drive chart for the... Yep, okay. So we had 8 plays, 7 yards, right? We get a first down. We have to convert a 4th-and-5, which, again, this drive didn't start off great. Will Greer was a little out of sync with all of his receivers this game. And, you know, we can touch on that later. You can call in again to interact with us. The number is 917-932-1765. But this final drive was not a very efficient drive for West Virginia. First play goes for 5 yards to Gary Jennings. We get 2 incomplete passes. Luckily, David Sills, Will Greer finds David Sills for 10 yards in the first down, right? So it's fine. All right, we got the first down. That's the most important part of mounting a drive. Then the very next play, Sills has a chance to gain about 20 more yards just offensive pass interference. That is completely bogus. But then we have 3 incomplete passes. We had an incomplete pass to Mark. Well, excuse me. I take that back. The very next play, we get a 7-yard pass to Gary Jennings, who 10 catches on the day. Really good for him. So we get 7 more yards, but then it's 2nd-and-18. And again, this is not about, oh, it's 2nd down. It kind of is, but this is not necessarily about that. You're just trying to get chunks of yards. And we go 3 incomplete passes in a row. Incomplete to Marcus Sims. Incomplete pass because he was scrambling and had to get the ball away. And then an incomplete pass to Caron White, who was not – statistically, he was our best receiver on the day because he had, I think, the most yards receiving. He had 138 yards and a touchdown. But how many times did he drop a ball that was just, man, that was bad. All right, we got 304-844-6370 on the line. I'm going to bring you in and hope to talk about this WVU-TCU game with you. 304-844, what do you have to say, sir or ma'am?
I have plenty of things to say. The first time listener, a long time listener, second time caller, I think. I kind of messed that up. Hi, Bart. How are you?
I'm great, Smitty. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. I'm just, you know, getting a little bit of a sweat in. I was actually worried. because the gym I go to is right beside the stadium, and HealthNet was landing, and so I was just like, hopefully that doesn't get on air. So I moved my car where I can't turn on the AC because it'll be too loud, so now I'm just going to bake in here. Hooray. So here in about like an hour, I could probably get you some brownies or a cake or any type of baked good that you like, so let me know. I'll take any type of request. Hi.
Hi. So this was
what would you like to talk about?
This is just frustrating. Let's not talk about the two most obvious things to talk about, because I think there are two very key things that we could talk about that, at the end of the day, to me, didn't really matter. Let's talk about the most.
Listen, I completely agree with you. Like, but I disagree with you a little bit. I don't see there's any reason for us to skip the fact that Florida just announced that they'll be wearing black jerseys against A&M next game. So I don't know why you'd want to skip over that. That's obviously what you're talking about.
Wait. Redefine black for a second.
If you go on Twitter.com, the University of Florida just announced that they will be wearing black jerseys.
Black helmet?
Black. I'm not sure exactly how to describe it on other than that.
Jerseys.
That's correct.
Their jerseys and pants are alligator scale print.
That's right.
Actually, hold on. It could just be alligator skin. We don't know.
You're absolutely right. I'm assuming all of it is just leather. They're just going back to like the old leather days. But I will say that I am just like, I don't know, like, is that a good move? Just because, like, I know just on Twitter, just like an hour ago before this announcement, they said, like, they had like a little promotion that said no one gets out of the swamp alive except for Gators. Well, that was just disproved like a day ago after Florida just gained a transitive defeat to Troy through the hands of the LSU Tigers. Of course, this is obviously what we wanted to talk about on the Smoky Muffin podcast.
Well,
but
of all the
transitive
defeats, that one makes the most sense. Because I could see that happening.
True.
Like, it totally could happen.
100%.
If you score 20 points,
absolutely,
you might beat Florida.
Going back to what you were saying, like, I don't know if there's any, I mean, like, that, I don't believe that was offensive pass interference. I think that was very home cooking. I would say, like, the entire sideline, like, of TCU, where that play happened, they all pretty much begged for that call and they got it. I don't know, like, I just kind of put that up to, like, playing away. So you were just talking about Will, like, I don't know, man, like, he misses some passes, which, like, I guess that goes along with his brand of just, like, it's either, like, nothing or, like, 90-yard touchdown, I guess, which even though we haven't really seen that yet, but you know what I'm saying. There's a couple, like, throws that he's just kind of, like, missing. I don't know if it's just the fact that, like, this is his, what, like, is it his 10th start in college? Is that, I mean, is that where we're at this point?
10 or 11 start.
He's at sophomore level reps, I guess, this point. I don't know. I mean, they all seem to be throws that he knows that he can make and he just overthinks them. So, I'm not sure. I mean, I felt like the defense played really well. I think TCU, the fact that they were having to do some really chintzy stuff on offense just to be able to get in the end zone, including
two trick
having plays. An overturn that was questionable. I'm not saying that we deserve the interception, but I'm not saying that, like, it could have went either way. We didn't get a bounce, which is too bad, but that will happen whenever you're on the run against the top 10 team.
This is my thing about the overturn. The call was made that it was an interception on the field,
right?
That was the call on the field.
There was not enough evidence there to be able to overturn it, in my opinion, but whatever.
I mean, we're obviously biased.
Obviously.
I want to ask you this about Will Grier, or maybe make this point about Will Grier. Okay, we talked about how he missed some throws. What do you think the most egregious missed throw he had this game was?
I mean, I think it was over the middle, right in front of him. Was that going to be a touchdown? I haven't rewatched it again. Like, it looked like that was going
to
at least be a conversion.
Yes, that was the most important throw that he missed. And yes, it was going to be conversion. But do you know what happened immediately after we missed that throw?
I do not.
We missed a field goal.
Yeah.
So this is not saying that Will Greer is a bad quarterback. Do not like. Well, maybe if you want to believe that, just to get mad and tweet at us, fine. I can't make you believe what you want to believe, but it's one of those things where this entire game was, we had an opportunity, we didn't take it, and then it just sucked. So he misses the somewhat easy throw on 3rd and 3. Mike Foligno misses a 29-yard field goal, and we go into the half down 7-3. I mean, granted, there were like 4 punts after that, but still. I don't know. Adam Nunez is an MVP, is he not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, legit very good. I mean, they, like, talked about it after the game where, like, he was just making plays, and then, like, after halftime, like, they didn't change what they were doing at all, and then, like, they were getting better outcomes just because, like, I guess, like, regression to the mean type stuff. But, I don't know, like, Yeah, I think I did. That's right. Yes. There's a lot of market correction talk because of business school, grad school. That's right. I don't know, like, we didn't make that many mistakes. I thought we played pretty well, and actually we showed that we are a pretty decent team, including the fact that we were able to stop their running game, which was pretty amazing. But, I mean, we had 1 or 2 too many mistakes, and you can't make mistakes whenever you're on the road against a top-10 team. So I'm not all that upset about it, just because, I mean, I feel like the national conversation about West Virginia is definitely elevated after that game. Like, we got major props from almost every outlet that I could see, where, like, I understand moral victories. Like, we're not necessarily in the market for that. But, I don't know, like, I wasn't super sure about this season. I wasn't, like, sure about what the outcomes would be. I just want to see some progress. And so I know losing a game away isn't how you get 10 wins, but I don't know if that's necessarily the way you chart progress. I'm not sure. I'm not really sure how to feel about it quite yet. I just know that Texas Tech is going to be pretty tough, but I don't know if you want to look forward quite yet.
I mean, we can look forward a little bit and just say that we've opened up as a 6-point favorite, but Texas Tech does look like low-key confident. So that's a little scary. And what's scary is, and I talked about earlier, Dana's 6-17 against top 25 teams in his tenure, and we've lost 9 in a row. And now Texas Tech is what? Ranked. So, you know, that's not great.
I will say to that stat, like, I saw that, like, that tweet over the weekend too. I mean, the reason why we don't have a great record against ranked teams is that, like, they're usually pretty good.
When you're playing a top 10 Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Baylor, and TCU, you're probably going
to. I would like to know how many of those teams are we talking about, are these teams, like, how many of those are top 10 compared to top 25? I would like to know.
Well, the article that WVU Knight wrote today lays it out pretty well. I think it was WVU Knight. Back in 2014, when this started against TCU, right? They were number 10. We lost to in 2015, lost to number 2 Baylor on the road. Lost to number 5 TCU on the road in 2015. Lost to number 9 Oklahoma in 2016. You know, you're right, lost to number 8 TCU this year. So, yeah, a lot of those are top 10 teams.
I mean, people lose the top 10 teams. That's not necessarily
That's why they're in the top 10.
Yeah.
Some teams beat top 10 teams, like Michigan State beating Michigan.
Yeah. I also saw today that the Baylor game is a 8 p.m. game. And so that's nice that, like, they're answering the calls of Mountaineer fans everywhere asking for night games. But they are coming with the whole part that it's away. That's not great.
Yeah. We finally get a night game, but it is not at home.
Fantastic. Are we going to lose to Baylor? Are we going to lose?
No, it's not. We're not. No. But let's look. Waco may not exist in 2 weeks, okay? They already announced that Fixer Upper is not going to renew after this season. Baylor football is on a self-imposed winning ban. Who knows what's going to be there in Waco in 2 weeks?
Good point.
I'm just saying, it could happen. I mean, Waco could just be erased from the entire earth by their own doing. Like SpongeBob and Patrick. Patrick's suggestion to just push Waco over there.
I'll be fine with that.
It happens.
What is for people to call?
I don't know. Any other hot takes you want to make off of this game? Because I think you and I are on the same page where this game, it's like, I was emotionally prepared at the end of the game to lose. I was like, we're going to lose. It's fine. But we kind of got cheated out. But, like, TCU is a good football team, right?
I'm not too beat up about it. I get that, like people are upset. I was upset. But, I mean, like, this isn't the first tough loss to swallow this year, even. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Just kind of like, I'm not too upset about it. Keep moving on. There's nothing you can do about it now. So, for the love of God, beat Texas Tech, because if we lose to Texas Tech, then we're looking at, like, the bottom tier of the conference, which wouldn't be great.
Right.
Which
we're 1-1 right now in the conference. We're 1-1 right now. We're 3-2 overall. The season, look, I understand it's going to be tough to get to 7 or 8 wins this season, 100%. Each game ahead of us, basically, except for, like, 2, I think we're picked to lose. I think we're still picked to lose to Baylor if I looked up Bill C's numbers correctly, but that could not have been updated yet already. Anyway, you're right, though. How, like, okay, this going forward, here's the question. Our defense looked pretty okay against TCU, right?
Yep.
Is that because we had 2 weeks to prepare, or is that because we had 2 weeks to finally get it all right, and this is a sign of things going forward? What
do you
think? I
think it's because we had 7 returning starters come back, and we had 2 weeks.
You mean David Long being in the starting lineup made a difference?
Isn't that crazy? But also, we had 2 weeks of having to hear about how we were bad at stopping the run. Like this isn't the first time that, like, I've really been in classes with actual football players. So, like, just, I think it was last week. Like, not, like, the week where the Saturday was going to be the bye. Like I was in a class and the professor did not know there were football players in the classroom. And he was talking about how, like, he was upset that, like, we made Kansas look like they had Barry Sanders back there. And he did not know that there were 2 defensemen. Like, they don't start, but they're, like, 2, like, off the bench, like, whatever. But they definitely play a lot. And so I was just kind of like, first off, that's a great way to get killed because both of these guys are huge. So good luck with that.
They are much larger people.
Like, yes. But, like, seriously, like, I think that kind, like, I mean, they're human. Football players are human. They hear the same things we hear. And so whenever you just are told that you suck for 2 weeks, you're either going to answer the call or you're just going to lie down. And so there you go. It stepped up. It's not necessarily hugely surprising, but I'm just glad that they're, like, capable of doing it. How about that? Like,
yeah.
They have the ability to stop and run now, which is something we didn't really necessarily know before. Is that fair?
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that, one, Texas Tech is not going to run the ball as much as TCU will run the ball. So this will be one of the first times we're going to see an offense that actually can throw, like, really well against us. So this is going to be a different challenge against Texas Tech. But we did check the box off of can stop the run. And it wasn't, like, super effective stopping the run, but we were, you know, decent.
Yep. For sure.
I mean.
Okay.
They rushed for 170 yards.
Yeah.
Not bad. Real quick, also, Justin Crawford, 111 yards on 19 carries. He's now got 5 100-yard performances this season. How important has that been, do you think, to this offense?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, it's not even just Crawford either. Like Pettaway just came in and, like, got some yards, and McCoy came in and, like, gave some, like, legitimately good like, just utilization as a whole. So the running game in general is massive for this offense. And I'm still shocked that Spav is doing that. Like, I just –
yeah,
I don't know. I just had it in my head that he was just not going to change what he was doing at Cal whenever he came over here, just because there were no signs that he would be willing to run the ball. So now, I mean, like, I don't know if that is just because this is the first time he's been in a place where – it's arguable that the stable running backs are better than the wide receiver core, or, like, what variables, I mean, well, yeah. Like, well, unfortunately, I got to head out of here, so this is going to be my last thing. Sorry about
I'll
it.
I'll talk about
but,
it.
Yeah. Yes. So, but I'm kind of shocked about it, but I'm definitely, absolutely not upset about it. Like, being able to pick up 4 yards of first down is just, like, that just warms my old school South of Pittsburgh Steelers football heart. Like, I'm a real big fan of the Power Eye. I still am. And so just because I'm like an old person, like I'm 27, but I'm absolutely 87 at heart. And so, I mean, that's why I like Crackerel. I mean, obviously, right? Like, I listen to oldies and I like old school power football. I'm basically Big Ten. That's pretty much what I am.
Yeah.
But yeah. So,
yeah.
So
you're
saying
you're a Penn State person.
No, don't do that to me. I'm way
more
of a
Wisconsin.
Minnesota person.
We'll give you Wisconsin. You're more like
Wisconsin way more Wisconsin, way more Minnesota. Go Gophers, go Badgers. And all right, I'm done here. Have a hell of a show. And
appreciate
everyone should seriously call in. What is the call-in number?
So the call-in number, very simple, 917-932-1765. It's the link that you're listening to on the show. Call in, give me your opinion, because I know y'all have something to say about this, as Smitty just had something to say. So, Smitty, I appreciate your time, as always. I miss you. I hope to see you in the nearish future. So, enjoy being a student again.
Thank you very much. When are you coming back to Morgantown?
Good question.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Maybe I'll make it up for the Kentucky basketball game.
That'd be fun. Let me know.
I will.
It was good to talk to everybody. I miss all of you. Have a hell of a show. And bye, buddy. Hope you find it.
Goodbye, Smitty. Hope you find an A. No, that was Smitty, my former podcast co-host, an incredibly insightful and hilarious human being who is great at all things WVU football. We're going to take a break, but I do want to talk about something real quick when we get on the other side. But I kind of want to take a second to sit back and collect my thoughts for a second. So give me about a minute to take a break, get some water, and enjoy this wonderful song that I'm going to play for you. I got her. Thank you for that. I just needed to get a quick drink of water and everything. Talking for this long, a little tough on the vocal cords. And as I said on Friday's show, I was in Orlando, Florida this weekend for the USA versus Panama soccer game. And I was like two rows back from the field. Really cool stadium. For as much as I tend to talk a lot of crap about the city of Orlando and that club, I'll give them props. That stadium is pretty awesome. It's a very nice environment. And USA got the win, 4-0. So 4-0 win for the good old red, white, and blue. And we come back to play. Well, we actually are on the road to play Trinidad on Tuesday. So that's fun. But let's talk about some more WVU football. We've got about 17 minutes left here. So if you want to call in, please do. 917-932-1765. Again, 917-932-1765. You can also tweet at Smoking Musket for your opinions. Unfortunately, I'm getting a lot of comments as I am logged into this Twitter account that Matt Kirchner runs all the time. A lot of comments about this Florida uniform mess, and it is – y'all, you have look, you have to go see. Go to at Smoking Musket. Give us your take on this TCU game, but go check out the tweet that we've retweeted about the Florida uniforms. They're terrible. Anyway, so West Virginia, as I said, now 3-2, 1-1 overall. A couple of positives that have emerged. I mean, one, our running game and Justin Crawford has looked very consistent throughout the year. Only 142 yards this game, but again, Justin Crawford 111, averaging five, almost 6 yards a carry, and was really able to give us a good jolt and a good boost. TCU did catch on to our little cheat code we often used a lot, which was the third and long draw play. We used it almost every third and long, and it was TCU definitely caught on. They kind of had a spy on a couple of the plays, and they weren't fooled by it whatsoever. It was a little annoying and that we kept going to it, but overall, the running game was pretty good. But we need to talk about this receiving core, y'all. Look, Karan White, 6 catches for 138 yards and a touchdown. Great. David Sills, 7 catches, 116 yards, 2 touchdowns. He leads the nation with 9 touchdown catches or receptions as a wide receiver. That's great. That's awesome. Gary Jennings, 10 catches, 80 yards. No touchdowns, but 10 for 80. That's great. Marcus Sims, 2 for 32. He could have had another one. The throw to him that was intercepted was a miscommunication between him and Will Greer. I mean, Marcus Sims is your home run hitter. So, you know, if you're not going to hit a connect on a long ball to him, he's not going to catch much else. But he did okay. But that's only 4 guys who caught a ball this game. That includes all 3 of our running backs did not catch a ball. We didn't have any kind of like the tight end fullback hybrid of Wellman catch a ball. No other, you know, secondary receivers caught passes at all. Now, TCU, a less prolific, I mean, they only had as a team 16 receptions, so a total of 15 completions, which is why y'all need to hold your hype on Kenny Hill, whatever. So on the 16 completions, let's see, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys caught a pass. Right. One of those being obviously Kenna Hill for a touchdown. They had 2 touchdowns through the air. Jalen Rager had the other one, which was just a long pass that we got beat on. That's what happens in the Big 12. You know, you're going to get beat long on some passes occasionally. But 8 of those guys caught a pass where only 4 of our receivers caught passes. Now, I know that we're not utilizing every receiver all that much. And that's concerning too, because you're going to wear them out with all this, you know, all these plays that we run. I mean, we threw the ball a total of 45 times and we ran the ball, 39 times. So look, that's a lot of plays. That's 84 plays. You know, that's a good deal of running around for these receivers. And when you have them out there that you can rely on, it's not a good confidence-building stat as a fan when you're seeing what should be your most talented crew not giving you any sort of real production. I don't know how you fix that, because it comes down to guys have to show that they can catch the ball and be relied on, but it's also kind of Will Greer maybe being new to this offense still. And by new to the offense, I mean he's hasn't played a real game with these guys until this season. So, you know, there is a level of him being very comfortable, obviously, with David Sills and Gary Jennings. Karan White should have caught a couple more balls. So could have Sills. Sims maybe, you know, as well. But Karan White, really, his 6 for 138 could have been more if he catches a couple balls. It was frustrating, though, over and over how we struggled to take care of the opportunities we presented ourselves. And that was the story of this game. Whoa. 917-932-1765, you can call. I'm going to dive into something that I know a lot of people want to talk about. let's talk about these refereeing decisions. We're going to have two more topics before we end, and this is the second to last one. So, again, call in 917-932-1765 and share your opinions on the refereeing decisions that impacted this game Saturday, if you want. The first big decision that went against West Virginia was an interception that was disallowed, basically. I'm sorry, I think we caught the ball inbounds. Let's see if I can remember who that was defending that pass, because I don't really remember. I'm sorry. I'm a terrible person. Let's see if I can get that. All right, it was 1st and 10 Bundyars for 23 yards. Was it? No, it was a pass to Jalen Reagor, sorry, from our 34, and it ended up being incomplete. And we, for my guesstimation, caught the ball. We got the ball. It was ruled a catch and interception on the field. When you looked at the replay, you could definitely tell that there was a juggling act before he truly possessed the ball, right? But he had the ball possessed with one hand, with the left foot hitting green grass. Let's see, was it Hakeem Bailey? I think it was Hakeem Bailey. I'm not quite sure, but I'm going to give it to Hakeem Bailey because I'm pretty sure that's who it was. Anyway, I'm pretty sure Hakeem Bailey possessed the ball with one hand inbounds. Now, again, the referees called this an interception on the field. They then reviewed it, as they review all turnovers in college football. And they came to the conclusion that there was enough video evidence to prove without a doubt that the call should be overturned. And to me, this was an example of the Big 12 referees completely botching a call. Because there was no proof that he did not possess the ball in bounds, if that makes sense. In my opinion, you could not tell me that he did or did not have possession of the ball in bounds. Therefore, if you can't tell me for sure the opposite way, it's supposed to stay the way it was on the field. And they didn't do that. They instead gave the ball back to TCU on their 34. And from there, TCU hit a 23-yard, hit a 23-yard pass to John Diarce, 2R8, for a first and goal, and ended up scoring a touchdown on a Kenny Hill runaround play on 3rd and goal at the 3. And that's why we lose the game. Now, that interception, I am 100% not saying that we win the game. But what I am saying is that clearly when that play happened at 5:27 in the fourth quarter, we've got a chance. It's not like we hadn't driven the ball from the 1 yard line down into field goal range at least. Like we would have had a chance. I'm not saying we win it. I don't know. But cornerback to intercept the ball decided that somehow the call on the field was incorrect when there was no video evidence to show that it wasn't not correct. gave the ball back to the team, the home team, the undefeated team, and the team that at this point in time, because Oklahoma lost, was the only undefeated team in the conference. And you know the Big 12 has to have an undefeated team to make a college football playoff. We're not the SEC. We're not the Big 10. So I'm not saying that there's a conspiracy. Please do not understand it that way. But all these things factor together, and you have to look at that and go, how did you decide that that was the correct call and that somehow the call on the field was overtly incorrect? I just don't see it. I don't see it. If West Virginia gets that interception, I'm not saying we go down and win it, but I'm just saying that, you know, in 4 minutes and 57 seconds, there's a good chance that we take the ball for at least that long. And, you know, I mean, TCU wasn't exactly doing a great job of moving the ball all that often. They were hitting big plays, but they weren't doing a great job of moving the ball at a great speed. I don't know. It's frustrating because I think that more than the David Sills pass interference pisses me off, because you made the call on the field one way. The way that video review is supposed to work is that you're supposed to look and see if there is any clear error or evidence to overturn the call that you made on the field. And there was none. There was no evidence to say that what the call on the field was incorrect. And that's terrible. That's terrible officiating, and it's terrible. It looks bad for the it should look bad on the conference, and it's an injustice, really, to a team that played its hardest and wasn't, especially a defense that played very hard and wasn't able to come away with a big play. Now, the next one was the pass interference call on David Sills. We had just got a first down, big first down conversion. Immediately throw the ball to the out, and David Sills breaks, you know, he gets by the defender, who on replays and in live action clearly had a hold of his jersey, but somehow David Sills was the one who pushed off. Now, I can understand why you might think that he maybe got a little push from the initial, you know, he kind of pushes off to turn around and or to get a little separation, turn around and catch the ball. But as he's turning around, the other player grabs his jersey too. So which one is more egregious? And why is only one penalized? They're both pass interference plays. You either let it go or you call it on both of them. Those are the only two options, in my opinion. So they call this pass interference on David Sills, and we now have to go 15 yards back from where that line of scrimmage was. So we're at first and 25. Again, I'm not saying that this call is the reason we lost the game, because we should have done better to put ourselves in better positions to win the game before this. But if you make that first down play, that was another first down. That's two first downs in a row. West Virginia's rolling, and we're looking at first and 10 at their on their side of the 50, and we've got at that point about a minute 54, maybe a minute 50 left to make a comeback and score a touchdown. Again, not saying we do it, because we struggle to score touchdowns all day, but what you did as a referee there is take the ball out of the hands of the team and make the call yourself. And it was incorrect. It was a terribly officiated series right there. They didn't do terribly the whole game, but that particular call was absolutely bogus, in my opinion, and it's terrible. We got about 2 minutes left, so if you want to, you know, get your last minute opinions in, tweet us at Smoking Musket. Probably too late to take calls right now, but if you want to, 917-932-1765. Last topic I want to talk on is special teams, and this is what I think made me the most upset, because this is two sides of the ball worked incredibly hard today. Offense, defense worked great. Or excuse me, not today, Saturday. Offense and defense, great job. And then we have special teams. And I want to point out three things about special teams that annoyed the crap out of me. Firstly, that missed field goal. I know it was on the right hash mark for you, but Mike Molina's got to make that 29-yard field goal. And he didn't really give it a chance. It was a miss from the moment he hit it. And he's had a little bit of inconsistencies, but he's usually been pretty all right inside of 30 yards. So we don't get points there. That doesn't change the, you know, the final score, but at that point, it's 7-6, and you got to feel like if you're going to halftime up 7-6, you feel better about yourself, right? Then we muff the punt, right? This is actually before the missed field goal, but we muff the punt. And that punt led to – that muff punt and fumble and recovery by TCU led to a touchdown for – and then this is the one that I think people don't understand or don't realize yet. What TCU's final drive that ended in a touchdown, they got the ball at the 45 because of a kickoff out of bounds by Mike Bellina. Special teams, man. Excuse me, the 35, not the 45. Special teams. They're special for a reason, and we need them to step up and be better. So, again, I'm not saying that's the reason – I'm not going to say the referee is the reason we lost, but I will say that special teams contributed a great deal to our losing. We left 3 points on the score off the scoreboard. We gave them 7 points with our incompetent special teams punt return. And it's frustrating. But this has been the Smoking Musket Podcast. Thanks for listening to our live show. And as always, goodbye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.